Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to your Halloween edition of the Curzon Film Podcast. I'm Jake Cunningham. We've got some spooktacular guests this week. And as they say, if you've got it, haunt it. Joining me in the studio is a man who's so tired of my intros, he's developed resting witch face. It's Sam Howlett.
Hi.
And with film writing for Variety, The Eye and Sight and Sound, she's turning this podcast from a bunch of basic witches into absolute squad ghouls. It's Catherine Slay.
Oh dear, oh dear. Hello.
Hello. How are we doing, guys?
Good. Yeah. Is that the most bits in a minute you've done?
I think so, yeah. That's
I'm BPM, upping my your bits per minute.
Yeah, that's it. This week, it's not necessarily just Halloween the date, although I'm sure we're all very excited about that. We're talking about the new film from David Gordon Green, which is the... Which entry? What number entry? 13?
This is 11.
I think that's right. But it's also number 2.
Yeah.
Right.
Because they delete all of what's happened in between.
Right, okay. So I've decided to host this episode on Halloween because as an informed viewer, this is the first Halloween film I've seen. So I just thought I would be the perfect person to lead this conversation into...
It's so perfect how things work out sometimes, isn't
it?
Yeah,
yeah.
You've been waiting to talk about this film for years, I know.
I have, yeah. I remember telling you my love for Halloween franchise years ago.
You said, I've never seen it.
Yeah. And I never saw another one. So, Halloween, it's directed by David Gordon Green, and a bit of a weird choice when this was first announced.
Yeah.
Written by Danny McBride as well.
And David Gordon Green's one of those sort of completely bananas people where they're either making Brokaw kind of Seth Rogen comedies, or they're making these like gentle Terrence Malick sort of indie, or apparently now they're making Halloween.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's coming after a long run of these kind of auteur directors that grew up in the 70s and 80s that are now softly remaking their favourite films.
Right.
So, like, J.J. Abrams making a Star Wars film that's kind of a remake of the first Star Wars. Ryan Coogler directing Creed, which is kind of a soft remake of Rocky and sort of a reboot of that franchise as well.
Well, they're calling it, it's like the reboot call or something.
Yeah. So they're kind of, they're sequels to these films, but they're also kind of softly remaking them as well.
And Jurassic World.
Jurassic World, exactly.
Yeah.
You know,
and you say, obviously, you've not seen any of the other films, but I don't think you have to. The way that they're approaching these things is this should also work for you if you're new to the franchise.
Exactly, yeah. And think like, there are so many kids watching the new era of Star Wars who are dressing up as a Rey or a Kylo Ren. Or, who have no idea what their links are to anyone else. But that
and hopefully
matter.
Now six-year-olds dressing up as Michael Myers and terrifying living hell out of us.
Yeah, definitely. Six-year-olds should be watching this film.
It's entirely suitable. That's a Curzon-endorsed statement.
Yeah, if you are a six-year-old, find another six-year-old, find an enormous trench coat and get yourself into Halloween. So, as I said, I don't know this film, really, or this franchise. But there's a reason that you two are in this room, because I wanted to pick two people who I know love Halloween, love John Carpenter. Mm. So before we delve into this new film, can I just ask you both about your relationship to the first Halloween, the Halloween franchise as it developed, and maybe John Carpenter as well?
Yeah, I mean, let's start with Carpenter, the governor. He's one of my favourite directors. I would say he's one of the most reliable directors, if what we're relying upon him to do is create a completely mad image that will stick with you to the grave. If what we're relying upon him to do is to create a flawless piece of filmmaking, then he's not that guy.
Yeah.
He's got an incredibly sort of up and down CV. You've got something like The Thing, which I would say is one of the greatest horror movies ever made, maybe one of the greatest movies ever made. But then you've also got sort of ropey old nonsense like The Ward. He's not consistent, but I like that about him. He's not a cookie cutter director at all.
Yeah, and I think he's someone that grew up loving like genre films. And I think he makes really, really good like American genre films. And he makes them in this weird, they sort of look like weird, dark, quirky cult films, but does it in a kind of mainstream genre way. And he really sort of blends those two things together really well.
He's a little bit Garth Marenghi, a little bit John Carpenter, author, visionary, dreamweaver. Yeah, yeah.
When he does
composer.
Everything.
Yeah, he does everything.
Yeah, he's responsible for some of the best scores in his own oeuvre, and I would say, you know, the wider field of film composition. And it's not in that sort of lush or orchestral sense that a lot of people might think of classic film scores. He does a lot with very little, which I guess brings us kind of neatly to Halloween, an incredibly low-budget film.
That's it. I think of him as a bootstrap filmmaker. on the tube over here, we were talking about the era of like his first films, and you're thinking of a lot of stuff that was ending up in theatres was made by like three guys on a weekend with a bucket of glue.
Yeah.
And he feels part of that, but then somehow managed to turn that into multi-million dollar franchises.
Yeah, so Halloween, like, it came out on Halloween in 78, I believe, and it took a while for it to build up, because it was initially just shown at, like, drive-ins and double features and midnight screenings. It took a while for it to kind of break out of that kind of B-movie, just knock-off horror movie, and it was after the new year that it started to get popular. And it was in cinemas for like nearly a year, just because it was such a slow build to get really popular. And it re-released the Halloween after as well. And
100% that era when it wasn't all about the first weekend, do or die. You could sort of hang around and have a real slow burn of a hit.
Yeah.
And this absolutely was that, as you say, like not the most auspicious start to one of the most successful horror franchises of all time.
Yeah.
It was put together by a couple of producers who wanted someone to direct, I think it was going to be called The Babysitter Murders. So... you know, really considering what it's gone on to do, an incredibly kind of underwhelming beginning in some ways.
Yeah. And nowadays, like, no one would be caught dead releasing a film on Halloween. Like, that is the last date that you would ever conceive of showing it. Like, once it gets into November, you're done. I mean, this year alone, we got Halloween, 2nd of November, Nutcracker. It's over. It's like nothing will have that lasting power. And even on Halloween night, people are staying in and watching a spooky film at home. It's the weeks up to Halloween is where you make your money.
And it really kickstarts the whole slasher cycle of the 80s. There's films that come before it, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Black Christmas, that kind of thing. But this is the one that really establishes the tropes, you know, the sort of the POV of the killer, stalking, the helpless babysitter, the final girl trope arguably kind of originates and finds its legs here in Laurie Strode. And who we should talk about, because she's one of the sort of, even more so than Carpenter, one of the enduring figures of the franchise.
Yeah. So she was in Halloween 1 and Halloween 2, which takes place directly after Halloween 1. Halloween 3 doesn't have Michael Myers in, is a different, like an anthology film where they were trying to experiment with what the Halloween franchise could be.
Right.
Some really funny nonsense about sort of Stonehenge,
like
bringing
like
back the
evil toy manufacturer.
Curse of the Druids and really bananas.
Mad film. Okay. And there's like,
happy Halloween.
It's perfectly rendered.
Carpenter?
Just the first one.
Oh, right,
he wrote the second one, and I think he wrote the third one because he was the driving force to take it away from Michael Myers and make it this kind of anthology, Twilighty Zone. Each film's a different story.
That's cool.
Didn't work at all. So Halloween 4 is the return of Michael Myers. Halloween 5 is the revenge of Michael Myers. Halloween 6 is the curse of Michael Myers. Then Halloween 7 is Halloween H2O 20 years later, which Jamie Lee Curtis
underrated.
Came. But I think it's really good.
Mm.
And she comes back into it. She's now,
Laurie does.
Yeah.
Okay.
She's changed her name. She's a head teacher at a school.
Yeah.
Josh Hartnett
is
her son. Yeah, I think it sort of, and that director is really good as well. I've forgotten his name, but he's done a lot of the sort of teen horror of that era. He directed 4 episodes of Dawson's Creek, including the pilot. Like, he's got a really good sort of heritage in that sort of Scream era.
Steve Milner.
That's the guy. Mm.
I'm
quite impressed at just this
this memory man feat. Yeah.
So Laurie Strode kills Michael Myers at the end of Halloween H2O 20 years later.
Right.
But then that movie was suddenly a hit. So they did another one called Halloween Resurrection, where it wasn't Michael Myers she killed, it was a paramedic that was gagged and had a Michael Myers mask put on him. And then that's where Michael Myers, spoiler, finally kills Laurie Strode.
Right.
The rest of Halloween Resurrection, have you seen it? Is set in this weird reality TV show.
I mean, trying to keep track of the relationships and adoptions and revealed to be somebody's son or a police. Yeah. The Halloween franchise has one of the most convoluted mythologies of any of the horror franchises. It's sort of a bit like a European telenovela in terms of the
surprise
improbability
members,
of the sudden reveals of relationships. And I think one of the good things that the new film does is to just go,
none of that ever happened.
Etch a sketch, erase all that.
In the second one of the original run, it's revealed that Laurie Strode is Michael Myers' sister.
Right.
And that's kind of where their relationship, what their relationship is, and that's kind of what this, that's the reason why he's come after her all these years. Anyway, then it was remade with Rob Zombie's Halloween 1 and 2.
And that's just a whole new plot.
Right.
Yes, Rob Zombie was given permission to do it as long as he sort of tried to make it his own and not extend this mad mythology. So, I mean, I don't know. I think Halloween is strongest when it is at its most minimal and not getting into nonsense to do with what the mask means. And it's a sort of great irony of what we were talking about earlier, that the film starts from such simple origins, from a William Shatner mask purchase for sort of under $2 from a store. And then the franchise that grows from that tries to make so much of all of these little pieces of happenstance and things that weren't intended that way in the first place. It's a relief to see it get away from all of that.
Yeah. All right, well, I'll just quickly delve into this new one then, which is, confusingly enough, called Halloween as well. You might have thought this franchise was done, but Michael Myers still has terror to give. 40 years after the fateful night of John Carpenter's original Halloween, he's back, but this time Laurie Strode is ready for him. David Gordon Green helms his terrifying sequel with the blessing of Carpenter, who has contributed to a new score. So, we've gone through all of the Halloweens. Mm. How does this film work as part of this franchise? How does this film work as a film by itself?
I mean, as we're saying, it's sort of not part of the franchise in terms of plot. It's just, it says, that was all nonsense and now we're starting again, which is quite nice. And Jamie Lee Curtis gets to join that cinematic heritage of women who've been through a trauma and come out the other side absolutely nails hard. She's a sort of Sarah Connor, heavily tooled up. Almost
Ripley,
military.
Aliens.
Yeah, absolutely, Ripley. And I think that's a nice kind of place to take the final girl trope.
Yeah, 100%. It's interesting that this film has skipped out the past 40 years, because I do feel like this film feels like the 40 years still have happened. It's a weird feeling this film has for someone that's seen all these films. Even though this film says, oh no, they didn't happen, you still feel like everyone talks about Michael Myers as if he is this machine that has killed hundreds of people.
Yes,
that's true, because from the point of view of this film, he's only killed about 3 people.
It's pretty low body count in the first one compared to the others.
Yeah, all right.
Maybe that explains the foolhardiness of the podcasters who go after him, which is one of David Gordon Green touch. There's a couple of podcasters investigating the man behind the mask, and obviously it all goes well for them, and that's a really good idea. It works out stunningly.
Yeah. Let's go into the opening scene, which I think is maybe one of my favourite scenes from the film, where these two investigative podcasters go and find Michael at the facility he's being kept in, and he's being kept in this orange jumpsuit out in a yard to a chain, and there are kind of 40 other guys all in tied to a chain that have a certain vicinity.
A very nuanced take on the mental health system of America.
And very much how Jake approached me to be on this podcast.
And
Catherine has an orange square around her that we can't go past.
I'm wearing a mask, you can't see it. But.
And one of these journalists, in just a really delicate move to try and get some nice conversation out of Michael, just holds up the mask and starts screaming at him.
Why he's been allowed to do this by the facility, I don't know. But
And it just the chains start rattling of everyone else, and they're almost howling like wolves, and it just kind of amps up and amps up, and it cuts to this wide of seeing everyone just going mad. Yeah. And then it cuts, goes to black, and you just hear doo 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 doo, and there's this, like, that when that score kicks in, like, the room that I was in, like, gave a cheer.
Yeah.
It was brilliant. Even though I've got no reference point to why. But I know the music, and it was great.
Wow, this music's great.
People are loving this. And then the titles are just the traditional Halloween font, and then this pumpkin that has been allowed to go, like, mouldy and collapse, kind of reforming in reverse.
Yeah.
To me, that was kind of what this film needed to do, was kind of regrow
the mould.
Yeah,
the rot. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, forget about the Rob Zombie years. I think there are things to find in, sort of, as we said, Halloween H2O, but it's a great thing that they've disposed of the rest of it into the compost heap where it belongs.
Yeah. Mm. And so we are with these podcasters. And
they are the worst people in the world,
yes,
as well.
They are. Yeah, people that run podcasts.
Yeah, terrible people. And but they are supposed to be these kind of, like, true crime, like, sort of, they want to be serial, I guess, is the...
I think it's a nice little comment as well on that idea that you as a journalist are sort of allowed to go poking around in trauma for entertainment, which I have an ambiguous relationship with. True crime podcasts, they're fascinating and they're gross, and it's like looking under a rock and there's all the worst of humanity. And at the same time, you're like, is this okay? I don't know if this is okay. So it feels like a kind of continuation of what was established in the original Halloween, which was a fairly reactionary morality play. The kids who are supposed to be looking after young children but instead go off and drink and have sex, you know, Michael Myers is coming for you. And in this iteration, if you are a sort of slightly cynical journalist, Michael Myers is coming for you. It's a different era.
If you're just a kid that wants to dance, Michael Myers is coming.
Like, kids shouldn't dance.
Yeah. I think there's one bit where he kind of walks near a baby when everyone's kind of stomach lurched for a bit. And it's nice to know that he has some rules. Like, there is a line. But I think for everyone else is fair game for Michael in this film.
Yeah. He kills a lot of people in this film. Yeah.
And as you say, he walks. We don't consistently see him ever break into a run, which is one of my favourite things about Michael Myers. I think it's one of the things I have in common with Michael Myers. Like, I don't like breaking a sweat or jogging, and along with the POV shot, it's sort of making a lot of effort to help us identify with the face of evil.
Mm. And so in being transported between prisons, Michael...
On Halloween. Good idea.
Normal sensible.
Normal thing to do. Michael manages to escape.
Spoilers for Halloween.
Yes. And there is one person who's perhaps at the top of his shopping list for this evening at Halloween.
Did you say shopping list or chopping list?
Oh, I should have said chopping list.
Yeah, she's top of the chops.
Oh dear.
Yeah. I'm just
You're
trying
in the
to,
right room.
I'm trying to fit in with the puns, Jake. Okay.
That's spot on.
Okay, lovely. Yeah.
We are introduced to Laurie maybe quite like 10-15 minutes into the film.
Yeah.
And she is gone a bit panic room. We meet her daughter, Judy Greer, and we established that her life being Laurie Strode's daughter was very hard because Laurie has just spent 40 years kind of locking every door.
Very paranoid, sort of militarized her family, which I thought was a really great change for Laurie's character, because when I found out they were bringing Laurie Strode back, I was a bit, oh, I don't really know what this film is then. Because, you know, it just felt weird. I wasn't sure what this film wanted to be, but now that I've seen it, I know that actually it's a great idea to bring her back. And I think she is the thing that makes it worthwhile bringing this franchise back.
Although I do still want to see the idea that was floated for one of the sequels and I think ends up in one of the graphic novels. I don't think he's ever seen the screen yet, but where Michael exists throughout the film and then his mask is ripped off and it's Laurie. Amazed that never hit screen.
Oh, that sounds like the human raptors from Jurassic Park 4. How did this not happen?
Maybe for the next one.
Yeah. What, the human raptors combined with Laurie Strode?
Yeah. Name a more iconic duo. Like the greatest franchise team up. I'm into it.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
So once we've seen Michael escape and once we've seen Laurie kind of bolting up the house and we know it's Halloween night, ultimately we know where this film is going. And then it's really maybe an hour of seeing Laurie and her family be paranoid and seeing Michael doing some brutal kills. And it's a great time, isn't it?
Oh, it's a fantastic time. The brutality of the kills.
Yes.
There's a particularly good, well, I guess we don't want to spoil all of it, but it's a particularly sloppy moment involving a stompy boot.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I put it like that, it sounds quite cute. It is not
stompy
cute.
Boot.
Jake had to leave the cinema.
I went to the loo.
Jake collapsed.
Yeah, you keep telling yourself that. Yeah. He was terrified.
There is a really great moment involving in a garden with a movement sensor that turns a light on in the garden. And you can guess who kind of slips by between the light turning on and off.
Yeah.
There's fantastic moments like that. Just really simple scares. I think that's what I really liked from it.
Nuts and bolts, Carpenter would have wanted. Like, just down to bare basics. What do the audience want to see? What do they want to know? Here's what we'll give it to them.
Yeah, and we were talking on the way here about the elements of a slasher and whether something like Saw is a slasher because of how complicated the kills are. And it's a man with a knife. And ultimately, I felt more scared in this than I would with any of those films.
Yes, I mean, it's just way more plausible, isn't it? I rewatched it yesterday, and I had forgotten how many moments there are where he's sort of done some needlessly elaborate and complex tableau purely for the point to scare Laurie, maybe, but also it seems like it's got such an awareness of the audience. It feels like Michael knows he's being watched by an audience who's cheering him on, with the result that you do get a number of those. Do you know the term boot crabs moments?
The boot crabs moment.
Okay, so a boot crabs moment is named after I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Right.
It's that moment where in the film Jennifer Love Hewitt is looking in the boot of her car and there's a corpse there and it's crawling with crabs and goes to get her friends, as you would, comes back. It's clean. There's not even a little crab that's got left behind it. Like, a completely impossible level of elaborate planning and logistical difficulties that a killer overcomes purely for, us, the audience?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah,
anyway,
yeah.
And the original Halloween actually did, although it has this reputation for simplicity and sort of starkness, there are quite a few boot crabs moments, people falling down out of airing cupboards and the sort of thing. I mean, it's still a hoot, though. And
absolutely.
I'd also forgotten how bad some of the acting is. Like, really terrible.
Yeah. Do you remember the bit in the first one that always sort of takes me out of the film a bit, where one of the girl that spills something on her outfit and goes to clean it in the washing machine, and she's singing about her boyfriend. She goes, "Ma Paul, P-A-O-U-L."
There's some extraordinarily early scenes of 70s porn film. Like, she spilled a tiny bit of popcorn butter on her top and she takes almost all of her clothes off and then goes and gets sort of stuck halfway in and out of a window for no reason. It's not a graceful moment. I think if we're sort of saying, other slasher films, so silly, so ridiculous, it's important to remember that there was a lot of ridiculousness in the original.
Yeah. I think this film carries over that simplicity, but it also carries over some of the sillier moments that a slasher film is capable of. And that's great.
Yeah.
It's great that it has that fun as well.
Yeah. But it has that fun with the younger generation. It's generally like a kid who wants to go to prom who's going to end up impaled on a fence.
Yeah.
Post-death again.
Yeah.
Why has he put him on a fence?
Yeah.
For fun. But Laurie is taken very seriously. You know, she is not going to get stuck half in and half out of her militarised hideout in her underwear. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Well, it's great to talk about the original film there, because we mentioned about the new Star Wars and the new Jurassic World and how they reframe their stories for audiences. But I'm curious how this new film relates to its original counterpart in terms of like towing that line between appreciation and mimicry. Because there are moments that got a proper roar from the crowd that I was in, like this aerial shot over a rooftop and things like that. And to me, that got it just right, because I didn't come out of that film feeling alienated because of what I hadn't seen. And I think maybe like a Jurassic World or something leans too hard into what you know already from the franchise to get out of it as a new viewer.
Yeah, I don't think it's doing that thing where it's sort of nudge, nudge, wink, wink, you were there when it all began. I think it's pretty accessible for a new audience, although, I mean, you're the new audience, Jake. Did it work for you?
Oh, yeah, completely. I had a great time, and I look forward to going back to that first one and maybe not the ones in between.
Why
oh,
not?
You've got to see Season of the Witch. It's an absolute time.
And you should watch Curse of Michael Myers, because that has a cult in it called The Curse of Thorn.
Right.
Oh yeah, the thought. Oh my goodness. There's so much.
And Paul Rudd.
Nonsense.
Halloween 6 is introducing Paul Rudd in the credits.
And he's what, supposed to kill a baby because it's the future Michael. I can't remember.
But
he's
the nonsense. Kid from the first one, grown up.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, you're not allowed to be in the first Halloween film without turning out to have this ludicrous interwoven backstory. It's third extra from the left, probably Michael's you know, future grandmother who's been through a time warp arranged by the Druids of Stonehenge in order to hijack a TV network. The whole thing is, I think the good thing about the Halloween franchise as a whole is how stupid it is. And the good thing about these films that now bookend it is that they are not that.
Yeah. And this film is been out for a week. And it is a humongous success.
Yeah.
It is the second biggest opening for a horror ever after It.
After what?
After It.
After what?
After It.
After what?
After It.
After what?
After Stephen King's It.
Stephen King's what?
Are you going to cut this out?
Yeah, definitely. because it's not funny. So anyway, after It, which made $126 million at the box office, which is crazy for a horror.
Yeah.
Like, for an opening weekend, that was utterly mad that made that much money. And this came in with like 78 or something, which is still huge. This is coming off a $10 million budget. In its opening week, it's going to make 150 or something.
Horror must be the most profitable genre, is it? I mean, in terms of what you have to spend on it compared to what it makes.
So Get Out ended up doing like 400 off of five.
Yeah. Paranormal, under $1 million budget, made multiple millions.
Why are people even making other kinds of films? Just don't. Yeah, just make horror films.
Yeah. But what that does mean for this, after us spending a lot of this conversation talking about how terrible these sequels are and how needless they were, we're definitely going to get a sequel to this film, surely.
Yeah.
100%.
Are you now, do you feel rejuvenated in this franchise? Do you feel excited about the prospect of that? In a way, I do, but I feel like this was a closing.
I love endless franchises marching on forever.
Yeah.
I mean, they're sort of powerfully emotional to me, and that some of my first kind of encounters with these sorts of films was actually not even through the films themselves. It was leafing through like the Time Out film guide and sort of noticing, oh my goodness, there are 10 Halloween films out there, and the hilarity of those, this goes for sort of any of those long-running horror franchises, Freddy Krueger and Jason and all of them, all of these sort of chapters of the final chapter, the resurrection, the long big fight that will truly end it all, the stories that are told by the titles of those films were magical to me as a little girl. It's like, I want to go on this stupid journey.
Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare has a sequel. And Jason Goes to Hell has a sequel.
Well, even like recently there was Saw, The Final Chapter, which had Jigsaw 2 years later.
It says something really funny about the endlessly rejuvenating nature of cinema. I think I really like it.
Yes.
Quickly talk about the reverse shots that have mirrored the first film.
Yes. I wouldn't know, but
Let's do the film school bit.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Oh, so in the original, there's a bit where Laurie's in the back of a classroom in a lecture about fate, and she looks out the window and sees Michael Myers. In this one, it's Laurie's granddaughter who looks out the window and sees Laurie. And then there's a bit at the end in the first one where Michael Myers falls off a balcony, looks over the balcony, he's gone. This one, Michael Myers pushes Laurie straight out of a balcony, he looks over and she's gone.
So she's replacing him in the shop, possibly setting up the sequel where they take the mask off and Laurie is Michael Myers. I hope that happens. I don't. But it's really... I mean, I'd forgotten as well how sort of unintentionally funny some of those reveals are, where he's just standing there in the car park like a goober, just in this mask, like, why are you
broad daylight.
Broad daylight. Yeah. I think that's what's funny about it. And it's also what's genuinely unnerving about it, because he's not playing by the rules of the horror genre that says that he should be hiding behind a house in the dark. He's just literally stepped behind a hedge for a minute at about 11 a.m.
There is a tracking shot on Halloween night.
Yeah.
During Trick or Treat.
When he finally comes back to Haddonfield.
Oh, my word. This scene is so good.
It's good, isn't it?
I love this so much. Like someone like an Emmanuel Lubezki or someone like in a Gravity, when they're doing their 13-minute one take, you like feel it building up. They're like swinging their arms. They're telling you how good they are. And this you don't even notice for a while. And it's just like, it's a bit like It Follows. You know, those unnerving shots walking down a street. And initially you think you're kind of in this just a normal tracking dolly straight point of view type thing. And then it starts to put these steady cam turns in, and it gets a bit ghostly and a bit spectral, and it's quite fun. Mm. And then you realize that you're following Michael when he creeps into shot. And then he just goes around and around doing these fantastic kills, avoiding the baby, all of that. And then you think the shot is done. It's probably a good 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And then it rests on a window, and you think, because after all that movement, the camera's then sat down, it's done, the shot is over. And then it lingers for a few seconds, and then in the reflection of the window, you see Michael go by, and then he starts entering the house that the window is of. Oh, fantastic. Just...
And I think the thing I like about that is that, although, as you say, it's as complex as cinematography that like tends to win Oscars in less genre type pieces, it is on a par with that kind of craft. But I always really respect cinematographers who continually work in horror and comedy in particular, because they're sort of required to stay out of it to a certain extent. You're completely divorced from any idea of being scared or laughing if the DOP is just in there going, look at what an amazing DOP I am. So they have to both stay out of it and at the same time kind of give you your way into what is terrifying or what is funny about a particular shot.
Well, in my own definitions of research, I watched What Women Want this week, which was shot by Dean Cundey. And Dean Cundey shot the original Halloween.
Oh.
So like quite a versatile CV there.
Yeah.
I mean, really working from one horror icon to another.
The scariest thing he did is both of the Garfield films, of course.
Oh, those films are terrible. None of the actors in that film know how to like interact with something that's not there. So when they're like petting Garfield, it just looks so horrible and weird. Like they're just like petting air that someone's drawn over.
Another classic modern horror there.
Yeah, screaming my head off for the whole film.
So go check out Halloween in the cinemas if you want something this week. But it's not the only thing you can watch. You can stay at home and scare yourself silly with a new collection on Curzon Home Cinema, can't you, Sam? What's this one called?
Scary as f***.
I'm going to have to bleep that. Someone's giving me work to do. This is a pretty fantastic collection, actually. We've got the original Suspiria, It Follows, Audition, The Nightmare, A Bay of Blood, The Blair Witch Project, Let the Right One In, Nosferatu, American Psycho, Goodnight Mummy, and The Babadook. I mean, that's a brilliant collection with some of the most acclaimed modern horrors in there. For me, The Blair Witch Project, the scariest film ever made, is in there. I saw you wince at The Blair Witch Project.
No, it is scary.
It is scary.
It is
sure.
Scary. It is scary.
But It Follows is a particularly good partner, I think, for Halloween. Again, rewatching the original, arguably It Follows cribs rather a lot from Halloween. I'm not going to accuse it of being a ripoff, but it's certainly sort of borrowing lovingly.
Yeah, a loving tribute in some of the shots, like when they're the three girls walking down the road and it's this autumnal suburban neighbourhood.
Oh, even I could pick that up from the new one.
And seeing that It Follows is, I don't know what they're called, like the standing on a roof, all of that stuff. That's very Michael Myers. There.
The tall guy walking through the door.
Yeah, that's horrible. I mean, that is horrible. Yeah. But,
Is awful stuff. this is a great one. American Psycho as well. That's always
a great
beautiful
film.
I mean, you've got a great female-directed horror double in there. Do American Psycho and The Babadook. Mm. But I love American Psycho. I'm not sure if American Psycho should really count as a horror. It's so funny.
Yeah.
It's much more in that area of a hilarious satire that happens to have a couple of brutal kills in it.
Yeah.
And Goodnight Mummy, that was an early podcast episode, I believe.
It was. That's a horrible film. Yeah. Really good film. Sort of a Michael Haneke-esque horror film.
Ooh, lovely.
I think the nastiest film you've got on that list is Audition. I mean, don't watch that unless you want something sort of really, like, genuinely quite horrible.
Oh, God.
Yes, it's not nice.
But it's also got a lovely feminist subtext.
Yeah. I mean, if you just marathon this over the weekend, you'd have, I mean, by Monday, you're going to be quite a destroyed person.
Yeah.
But what a weekend that would be.
Yeah.
And finish up with Blair Witch just to sort of soothe yourself.
Yeah. Nice, relaxing one. So go and check those out on Curzon Home Cinema as well, Seeing Halloween. And if you've got any thoughts on Halloween or any of the other recent releases that we've spoken about on the podcast, that's stuff like Dogman or First Man, let us know by emailing podcast@curzon.com and we can read those out on next week's show. But we actually just released a kind of special episode on London Film Festival. So that was a nice little roundup. Yeah. And so you get some preview, review chat for what's going to be a lot of the films coming out in the next 6 months probably. And as well as that, you can check out a new episode coming up soon on the screening of the play Red. And so this was about Mark Rothko and his Red paintings. And it starred Alfred Molina and Alfred Enoch. And that played in the West End over the summer. And we were lucky enough to go. And you were lucky enough to speak to the Alfreds about the play.
Absolutely.
And so that screening's on the 7th of November, so you can still get tickets for that. But if you want another, a more theatrical edition of this podcast, do search in your feeds for that interview.
Well, it's about just Halloween, you know, red, blood.
Yeah,
Halloween.
There's something there.
There's something there.
Yeah.
Did Work you it get out. To call him Dr. Rothkopus?
I hope you did.
I did.
Yes.
I'm now joined by Dr. Rothkopus.
So that is Sam and Dr. Rothkopus on the Curzon podcast. And you can find more episodes of the Curzon podcast on iTunes and Acast. And if you do find us there, make sure you subscribe, leave us a review or a comment. We would much appreciate it. Next week, we'll be talking to Mike Lee about his new film, Peterloo. But that's it. That's it for our Halloween episode. Thank you so much for joining us, Catherine. If people want to get a bit more of your words, where can they find you?
They can find me on Twitter at Catherine Bray or on Instagram at Kath Bray. Actually, don't go to that one. That one's terrible.
No, it is bad.
If you want to check out some other work, a film I produced, Fear Itself, is on Halloween on BBC4.
And Sam, if people really do want to hear some words from you.
If they want to hear me talk more about Halloween 6, The Curse of Michael Myers,
yep.
I am on Twitter at SamHowlett_1.
Great. And I'm at Jake H. Cunningham. Thanks so much for listening. See you next time.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.